Hello and welcome to the Beyond Biotech podcast number 90. I'm Jim Cornall and this is the weekly podcast from LeBiotech. This week we're talking about a condition everyone has experienced to some degree, and that's pain. Jackson Brower is the Chief Scientific Officer at Dolaromics, and we had an in-depth conversation about chronic pain, what's new in pain treatment, and how Dolaromics is addressing the field. And I first asked about the company's recent exit from stealth.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to do that. So just as an intro to the audience as well, I'm Jackson Brower, co-founder and CSO of Dolaromics. We are a precision neuropharmaceuticals company. So to answer the question, we initially incorporated just about 4 years ago now during COVID, a little bit of a hectic time to be forming a company. But the idea at the time was this emergence of how can we use newer technologies that are coming online, particularly in the omics space. So starting to take advantage of different single cell transcriptomic technologies or proteomic technologies to actually better understand the progression of neurological diseases like chronic pain. As we have grown, we've started to expand our areas that we are looking to treat beyond chronic pain, but we have a concerted effort there and plan to initially address indications within that space. So jumping back to that timeline about 4 years ago, we had the opportunity upon forming the company to actually join Illumina's accelerator program. So for those unfamiliar, Illumina is kind of like the Microsoft or the Google of the sequencing world, where there are other competitors, but by far they have the market dominance and are the established players in the field. And while it's not around any longer, at the time, Illumina was running a twice a year or two cycle a year accelerator program wherein you could move out to either the Bay Area or a site that they had in Cambridge in the UK and actually be given lab space to set up your company for about 6 months and also have access to their sequencers. That was tremendously helpful for us because at the same time, we had just set up a few different collaborations to give us access to human sensory tissue. So we were working and still continue to work with several different organ procurement organizations. These are the groups that facilitate things like transplants of vital organs to actually access human sensory tissue. So primarily dorsal root ganglion and spinal cord to be able to sequence it and omically profile it using those resources at Illumina. So that's really where we began about 4 years ago. When I look back on the company itself, there's this almost natural progression where we went from building around this idea of we need to characterize these tissues better. We need to understand how we as humans differentiate from non-human species, like different rodents that pain therapeutic identification work has traditionally been performed in. We need to go from there to actually building out these databases to allow us to identify novel therapeutic targets. Once we had done that, kind of the second stage of our evolution was to build a computational platform around that, which we now call Dolores, kind of a play on our name Dolaromics and that root dolor, meaning pain in Latin. We developed this computational platform to identify novel therapeutic targets from the data that we were generating. And then from there, we kind of entered this build phase that we've been in for the last few years of actually starting to build out a therapeutic pipeline with several different assets in it. We haven't listed what those targets are just yet, but we've listed some of the indication spaces that we plan to go after, things that are being addressed in the field right now, like migraine, but as well as looking at some underserved areas like fibromyalgia. And that's kind of the progression of the company over the past 4 years in a quick little snapshot.
You're looking at pain. I wonder if you could kind of explain chronic pain and how much of a problem chronic pain is.
Yeah, absolutely. So this will be a good little test for me. I'm going to see, I believe I can recite the International Association for the Study of Pain's definition of pain and chronic pain. So you can fact check this after the fact and see if I got it right. But I believe that IASP defines pain itself, not chronic pain, but pain, as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience related to or associated with actual or potential tissue damage. So that's kind of a very roundabout way of saying pain is this thing that we perceive that can be related to tissue damage or disease, but isn't necessarily. Chronic pain is then defined as pain that persists or recurs for more than 3 months in most definitions of chronic pain. To your second part of that question, the actual problem or, how big of an issue is chronic pain? While I know it may be a little bit less an issue, while still an issue for your EU and UK audience, most folks who have turned on the news over the past 10 years are familiar, in the US at least, with the rising opioid epidemic, which is part and parcel fueled by the incidence rate of chronic pain. So we can look at the kind of problem of pain through that angle or through any other number of angles that we'd like to. As far as the incidence rate goes, again, in different surveys of individuals, you do see a wide range, though commonly the percentages that you'll see really range anywhere from 20 to 30% of the population worldwide. So it's a significant proportion of the human population that suffers from chronic pain. I think one of the things that's really notable here is that that increases with age. So while that may be 20 to 30% of the total population, when we look at elderly populations or individuals over the age of 65 in particular, you start to see that prevalence exceeding 50% of the population, which obviously has huge downstream costs, both economically and personally, as well for those populations that are suffering from chronic pain.
When it comes to treating chronic pain or even defining it, how much of an issue is the challenge of pain being kind of subjective?
I would certainly say, right, on that last part, especially, pain is an individualized experience. It is difficult to minimize another individual's pain because there isn't a unified measure, right? We can't do things that we can do like in oncology, where we can diagnose cancers based on their staging. To an extent, we are all familiar with going to the doctor and pointing at a series of faces from 0 to 10, with 0 being a smiley face and 10 being a very upset face. But at the same time, you're right, pain is a uniquely individual experience. And oftentimes when we're relating that experience to others, you do run the risk of it being minimalized. I think maybe the way that we try to address that at Dolaromics is delineating this idea of nociception versus pain itself. Again, pain being that emotional experience that we have, do we believe at Dolaromics, to changes in nociception, particularly in chronic pain. And I'm happy to dive into that if you'd like.
Yeah, that would be good.
So when we at Dolaromics think about nociception, we primarily focus on nociceptors, which are highly specialized sensory neurons within the peripheral nervous system. But kind of backing up a step, nociception itself is referring to physiological processes, our body's ability to detect harmful stimuli, again, originating in the periphery and signaling to higher central brain areas. So the kind of first step of nociception is the activation of those sensory neurons, those nociceptors, in response to either tissue damage or other stimuli. Thinking back to like a Neuro 101 course, those can be broadly grouped into thermal, mechanical, or chemical stimuli that are causing those nociceptors to activate. From there, nociception itself has really canonically been thought of as these four key processes: transduction, so that initial activation of nociceptors, and generation of electrical signals, which is a key part of our ability to actually develop novel therapeutics, and we can dive into that in a minute. From transduction, we go to transmission. So that's kind of encompassing that transmission of action potentials and signals from the periphery to the spinal cord to higher brain regions. And then the last two processes are modulation of that signal within the spinal cord, and then the perception. So that's where we're starting to, again, tie more into that component of pain as a emotional sensation that we feel. And there is a difference between nociception and pain, right? When we are referring to nociception, we are talking about these electrical signals in our ability to either, in some cases, measure them. That's most often ex vivo, but there are clinical methods for doing so. And also to modulate them and ideally develop novel therapeutics around them. You're right that pain itself is still subjective. However, I believe, and we can talk about it, that recent clinical successes in addressing that actual transmission of the signal, both the transmission of the signal and the transduction of the signal, really do pave the way for us as a precision neuropharmaceutical company to come in and develop novel therapeutics.
What would you say are the biggest challenges when it comes to developing new ways of treating pain?
Yeah, I think for us, the biggest challenge and where we've spent a bulk of our time is actually in identifying targets for the treatment of pain. In the field right now, the hot areas of kind of this next stage of analgesics is largely around sodium channels and other ion channels as well. Since the beginning of 2024, I have seen the rise, really the splash around three different companies that have come out, are either come out of stealth as well or launched clinical trials or, you know, kind of whatever, however else you want to characterize that. Anyways, those being Vertex Pharmaceuticals, which has a clinical stage NaV1.8 channel inhibitor, a company known as Latigo, which is also developing sodium channel inhibitors, and then a company known as Nocion, who are also developing ion channel inhibitors. All of these three companies, really what they hold in common is that they are specifically looking to modulate that initial transduction or transmission of those painful signals from the periphery to the brain.
In some of the literature that you sent me, you kind of mentioned how chronic pain could be redefined from a symptom to a disease in its own right. I wonder if you could explain a little bit more about that, and also maybe how treatments can progress from pain management to pain resolution.
Yeah, absolutely. So in doing so, I'll talk a bit about our platform as well, kind of the underlying philosophy that we have at Doloromics, if that works for you.
Sure.
When we are looking at developing new treatments, this goes back to my previous answer about identifying novel targets and really understanding what is actually causing that initial transduction event to occur. We take an approach here that our core belief is these nociceptive neurons are innervating all the tissues in our body. And in doing so, they're interacting with almost every other cell type in your body. We can take the example of a patient with rheumatoid arthritis, where they have pain in their left knee joint that is persistent and by all means is chronic in the definition. Here in the United States, I believe that there are more than 15 different approved FDA therapeutics for the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. What we see in patients who receive those FDA approved treatments for rheumatoid arthritis is that while the treatments themselves are remarkably successful at treating the RA itself, and patients are able to be considered in remission of rheumatoid arthritis, oftentimes in a substantial population of those patients, you actually have the persistence of pain even once a patient has gone into remission, meaning the clinical symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis have resolved. They are no longer present. The synovium itself, which is the tissue in that knee joint, has returned to a baseline state. At the same time, the patients continue to feel pain in that joint area that impacts their day-to-day life. So what we do here at Doloromics is we use those omics technologies, things like single-cell transcriptomics, to actually profile tissue from those patients and identify what signals have changed between, say, fibroblasts or macrophages in that tissue compartment in those patients. And in doing so, identifying which of those signals, these can be things like secreted ligands that are signaling to various different receptors on the nerve fibers themselves of the nociceptors. We identify those ligand receptor interactions and then take a step of trying to either resolve or remove those signals, and in doing so, aim to return the pain itself to a resolution state. So that was a bit of a word salad or a bit of a jumble, hopefully not too much, or hopefully you were able to follow along. But I think kind of what that idea tries to encapsulate is that oftentimes when we are treating traditional diseases like rheumatoid or osteoarthritis or any other number of inflammatory diseases or conditions like fibromyalgia, oftentimes now we are able to better treat the disease itself, but the pain persists. And so while maybe it's not exactly correct to think of chronic pain as a disease itself, I think that we need to address the fact that when we are treating these diseases, we also need to have the capacity to treat the pain. And oftentimes that relies on focusing or identifying different mechanisms that are driving the persistence of pain.
You mentioned already what some of the other approaches are. I wonder if you could maybe, seen as some of them are quite interesting, if you could explain the VX548.
Yeah, so that's the compound that Vertex has launched now through phase 3 clinical trials, I believe, and been publishing data about, and I think it's going to bring enormous relief to a substantial patient population. So we mentioned that those first two steps of nociception are transduction of signals and transmission. I assume that most of your audience will probably be familiar with the idea of neurons communicating with each other by generating action potentials. So these are electrical signals that travel down the axon to the synapse and relay that electrical signal to another neuron at the most basic high level. What Vertex has done and really cracked the code with in an area that others have before them have tried as well is to develop small molecule inhibitors for a specific sodium channel known as NaV1.8 that is pretty highly expressed on nociceptors in peripheral sensory neurons. The idea behind these therapeutics is that when somebody is in chronic pain, the nociceptors themselves become hyperexcitable. They fire more frequently. That's kind of the underlying basis for their approach, as well as our own approach at Doloromics. We're addressing neuronal hyperexcitability. Where our companies diverge is Vertex is developing these NaV1.8 inhibitors that show a remarkable ability to actually dampen that signal from being generated and kind of return those nociceptors back to a baseline. So what their small molecules do is they actually block those ion channels, and in doing so, stop that actual nociception to higher brain regions. And I think what their clinical trials have shown is that by addressing nociception in the periphery, you can address that sensation of pain and chronic pain in patients, which is a remarkable proof of concept for the field itself. And they're certainly not the first to do so, but they've had some amazing clinical success so far. Where our paths diverge, though, is like I said, they're addressing really that ability of nociceptors to fire right away. What our therapeutics are aiming to do instead is to look at the signals that are actually causing the nociceptors to fire more frequently. So we are identifying things like cytokines that traditionally haven't been known to signal through nociceptors, and really understanding their physiology and their ability to drive both an acute response where the nociceptor fires more frequently in response to a cytokine binding its cognate receptor on the nociceptor, as well as what causes that persistent positive feedback loop that leads to the nociceptor becoming hyperexcitable and persisting in that chronic pain state.
And what about the use of monoclonal antibodies against CGRP and its receptor?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a number of players in the CGRP field now, both on the monoclonal antibodies, and there's also several small molecule inhibitors for the receptor itself that are clinically approved now. I think these really encapsulate our approach at Dolaromics a little bit better than the NAB channel approaches that others are taking. What I would say there is kind of backing up a step. So CGRP, or calcitonin gene-related peptide, is a neuropeptide. And when it is released from neurons, it causes a potent vasodilation. And while there is an enormous breadth of research in the role of vasodilation in conditions like migraine, at the same time, I would say that that story isn't fully understood just yet. But what is shown is that in these patients who have previously had treatment-resistant migraines, that the CGRP antibodies are remarkably successful in being used as a preventative measure. So when we think about migraine and migraine treatments, we can think about treatments as either being preventative, where we have to take them quarterly or weekly or biweekly, depending on what the dosing schedule of the therapeutic is, to stop the migraine from actually onsetting. And we can also think about migraine treatments as abortive. So once you have a migraine, you're able to take that treatment. The CGRP antibodies are typically preventative. They're not going to be able to resolve a migraine once it's actually set in a patient. That said, these kind of pave the way, in my mind, for developing a precision medicine approach to treating different types of pain like migraine. Fundamentally, if we kind of take a 40,000 foot look at these treatments and what the idea behind it is that if we remove a signal, we are able to stop the pain, in this case, migraine, from onsetting. And I think that's just a remarkable advance for the field at this point.
I guess this is kind of taking a step back a little bit, but how have recent advances in genomic technologies advanced the understanding of pain?
Yeah, so I'll speak for ourselves. Fundamentally, they've allowed us to understand human biology to a greater degree. Even when I was an undergrad, which wasn't too long ago, or maybe I'm just kidding myself there, we had very limited abilities to actually profile the wide range of receptors that these human nociceptors expressed. You could pick a few and perform either flow cytometry or an IHC experiment in stain populations of cells to identify various different potential drug targets that they may express. What we're able to do now, particularly with technologies such as single-cell transcriptomics, is to take every cell in a given tissue and fully understand its molecular landscape. This allows us not just to look and see whether a drug target is expressed in a given tissue or not, but to actually understand better how these cellular populations differentiate from one another and how they may then be differentially affected by different types of disease. In the role of what we're interested in, sensory neurons, nociceptors, we're able to take human dorsal root ganglion and then, using these advances in omics technologies, take the tissue, dissociate it, sequence it, and then categorize and characterize all the different populations of nociceptors. And that's really important because different populations of nociceptors play different roles in our perception of the world around us. Nociceptors are not a kind of generic one-size-fits-all class of neuron where they're all conveying the same information about the world around us. You have nociceptors that convey things like temperature, nociceptors that convey mechanical responses, and you have nociceptors that can convey things like chemical responses, again, more looking at being able to perceive things like tissue damage or inflammation. A really nice example of this is a population of nociceptors which sense temperature and express markers like tryptamine, a ion channel known to transmit the sensation of colder temperatures. These population of cells are fundamentally affected in treatments such as chemotherapies for other diseases. What that causes then is that patients undergoing chemotherapy oftentimes develop cold hypersensitivities, which on its face just seems like an inability to really withstand touching cold things. But it's actually much more severe than that. Individuals who are undergoing chemotherapy and develop chemotherapy-induced peripheral neuropathy oftentimes develop these cold hypersensitivities, wherein after receiving their chemotherapy, they go to their fridge to get out a can of Diet Coke or another drink or something like that, and they touch the can, and initially it's painful and they're unable to really hold it and they put it back in the fridge. But what that actually leads to is a longer sensation of pain in that affected area, because those thermoreceptors, those cold sensing nociceptors, are hyperexcitable, and that insult of chemotherapy that is driving that painful phenotype is then leading to a hypersensitivity when the patient engages in their environment and tries to go about their day-to-day life.
You've already mentioned the Dolores platform. I wonder if you could go into a little bit more detail about how it works and your approach to treating pain.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dolores as a platform has both an in silico and an in vitro or ex vivo portion of it. Where we begin with on that in silico portion of the platform is taking human tissue, again, primarily dorsal root ganglion or spinal cord. In addition to that, we're also obtaining tissue from, I mentioned synovium, from patients with various different types of arthritis. We also look at things like other peripheral nerves, like sural or sciatic nerve, from patients, say, with diabetic peripheral neuropathies. And what we do is we take all of these tissues and we profile them omically using, again, those same techniques that we've already talked about, from bulk transcriptomics to single-cell transcriptomics to proteomics, and even looking at things like the epigenome through spatial attack sequencing or looking at microRNA regulation networks. And in doing so, what we do is develop this comprehensive atlas, or what we call nociceptive cartography, around the tissue and how our sensory tissue changes across various different types of disease. From there, we take a fairly involved computational approach to identify the signals between cells and within cells that are changing and leading to the nociceptors becoming hyperexcitable, which is, again, kind of the key part or the basis of the platform itself. We're trying to understand better what signals are not just changing, but what signals are leading to the increase in excitability, which leads to the increase in transmission from the periphery to the central nervous system. From there, we identify a typically short list of therapeutic targets that we want to validate in our wet lab. Traditionally, I'm sure most folks in the lay audience will think of neuroscience drug development and picture a movie that they've watched or something similar, and picture a scientist standing in a room of lab rats. We take a human-first and human-to-human approach in developing our therapeutics, meaning as we move into the in vitro or ex vivo portion of our platform, rather than relying on those traditional animal models, instead what we're doing is taking either the human primary tissue, so taking the human dorsal root ganglion and spinal cord that we are obtaining from organ donors, or taking iPSC-derived sensory neurons. So these are sensory neurons that we're growing from induced pluripotent stem cells and differentiating into a mature sensory neuron phenotype. And we use those for actually screening our therapeutic targets or the eventual drugs that we are developing themselves. So to kind of explain that maybe a little bit better, what we're doing is we're taking traditional neuroscience approaches, like running various different electrophysiological assays, say plating cells on a microelectrode array, which allows us to monitor the cell's firing rate. If we remember, the cell's action potential firing rate relates to their kind of state of excitability. So what we may see when we culture, say, human tissue on a microelectrode array is that at a steady state or baseline, it's fairly silent or not firing very often. However, when we add a given factor that our platform has identified, we see that the signals increase, say in response to a growth factor that Dolores has nominated as being a key driver of chronic pain. And we add that exogenous growth factor to the cell's microenvironment, we see that the nociceptors or the sensory neurons increase their firing rate. From there, what we can do is monitor how, not just the amount, but how long that pain phenotype persists and how it changes the underlying baseline of the tissue that we're working with. From there, we can take that next step of beginning to develop therapeutics, which we can then again test in that same test system.
As far as delivery goes, what kind of delivery methods are you looking to, or is that too far down the road?
I wouldn't say it's too far down the road. I think it's important to always be keeping those things in mind as we start to develop therapeutics. So you'll see on our website that we have 7 different therapeutic programs ongoing in various stages of development right now. Those range from monoclonal antibodies to small molecule inhibitors or positive small molecule positive allosteric modulators or negative allosteric modulators. Really all to say that we are a bit modality agnostic at Dolaromics. The team itself has a deep expertise in neuroscience and in drug development, particularly my co-founder, Chris Flores, who's an industry veteran of 20 years at J&J. We rely on the team to identify the best therapeutic modality to address a given target that is nominated by Dolores. When it comes to things like delivery routes, obviously, that will depend on what that end chemical matter is. For something like a monoclonal antibody, it may make sense to do a more localized infusion or injection, particularly in cases where the pain itself is more localized to a given compartment of the body. But at the same time, it may prove out that based on the pharmacokinetics of whatever therapeutics we end up developing, may be amenable to a systemic administration as well.
And I guess one of the other things that is associated with, especially with pain treatments, is cost. Is that something that's on your radar as to how to keep costs down?
Absolutely. So our CEO, Lucas Rodriguez, is really fond of saying, when we look at traditional treatments, things like opioids, that opioids have a place in pain treatment. That place just isn't in our medicine cabinet at home. I think that is important when thinking about things like cost. Particularly here in the US, we do have to keep in mind that while we could develop the greatest therapeutics for treating pain itself, we still need to be able to address the fact that likely therapeutics such as monoclonal antibodies will cost more than a traditional opioid. The hope here is that we will be able to demonstrate that our therapeutics will be disease modifying and will lead to pain resolution rather than just treating that symptomology of pain. I believe if we're able to do that, we will be able to justify those costs associated with development of various different things like biologics.
And so what are the next steps for the company in terms of clinical trials?
Our lead asset right now is really approaching IND. I believe that you can draw up the natural time course from there of when we should ideally be entering clinical trials with that lead asset. But our other assets as well are starting to approach IND, particularly some of our monoclonal antibodies. So as a company, particularly as a small biotech, and I'll be a little bit more cagey here in my response, we'll focus on developing our therapeutics, likely up to a stage where we can then partner them with larger pharmaceutical companies, just because we really believe our expertise is in identifying novel therapeutic targets and developing initial chemical matter around them. That said, I don't see us ever really going into those late stage clinical trials, things like phase 3 clinical trials. Rather, instead, I think we have a lot more strength in developing the earlier stages and then partnering for later stages.
pretty much everything you needed to know about the treatment of pain there. Definitely an interesting subject of study and good to see new treatments in development. Don't forget to check out the latest news and articles over at labiotech.eu, and I hope wherever in the world you are, you have a great week ahead. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another Beyond Biotech.